The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Amateur Traveler Podcast, Episode 41.
Welcome to the Amateur Traveler Podcast. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Today in the Amateur Traveler Podcast, we go to Marrakesh, Morocco. This episode is brought to you by Hotelbook.com, the official site of independent hotels worldwide. Hotelbook.com. Stay your way. Stay independent. I have two news stories for you this week. The first one is that the Frequent Flyer program turned 25 years old on May 1st, which is the anniversary of when American Airlines launched the first Frequent Flyer program. In the last 25 years, flyers have redeemed their miles for close to 280 million free flights, which is a pretty amazing number. But the other amazing number, the last number that I have seen reported for the number of unclaimed miles in frequent flyer programs right now, is 14 trillion miles. To put 14 trillion miles in perspective, that's the distance from the Sun to Pluto times 3. Although, as my wife points out, you won't be able to get on the flight to Pluto because those seats are all blacked out. So if you're having difficulty redeeming your frequent flyer miles recently, that might be why. The other that's incredible story about airline travel is Airbus is trying out an idea with Asian carriers about having standing room only seats. Well, that's an odd concept. Standing room only non-seats on their planes. Basically, it would save 5 inches of space between you and the person in front of you if they would, instead of sitting you down, they would strap you into a slanted platform. You got to see a picture to believe it. I have links to that in the show notes at amateurtraveler.com. Those of you who listened to the Amateur Traveler before know that I try and run this as a G-rated show, family-friendly and work-friendly. And I believe this show is, but as Rod starts to talk about food in Morocco, you may or may not want to have small kids leave the room, and you'll know why when you hear this interview. I'd like to welcome on the show Rod. Rod wrote me last week, and he's been a longtime listener of the show. If you've been on the forums, he's Brown Bag on the forums, and he wrote me about a trip to Morocco and sent me some very interesting pictures. So I've invited Rod to be on the show to talk about his trip, and I thank you very much for coming.
Thank you for having me.
So what led you to you went to Marrakesh in Morocco?
We did. A couple things. One was my wife and I tried to travel international every other year. We had been trying to use up about almost a million frequent flyer miles before Delta went out of business, and you can use 200,000 a pop when you fly international first class, and we were looking for somewhere the dollar would go a little further.
Oh, okay.
Plus, there's always been that handful of places that you've just always said, gee, I'd love to be able to go, and Marrakesh in Morocco was one of those for me.
Now, Rod said when we were off the air that he was going to have a hard time with the what does he wish he knew, because he was well prepared for this trip. How did you prepare for going to Morocco? What kind of resources did you use?
I had the most bizarre experience. I was on Amazon looking for guidebooks, and you can read different people's reviews. I was reading a review of this lady, Mary, and I said, boy, her reviews are great. She's an expat. She's lived there for 9 years. She ought to know. I'm going to look at all her reviews. I clicked on her name, showed me her reviews. Then it said, do you want to be something like part of her circle of friends. And I thought, well, this is a site that gets 30 million people a day. How personal can that be? I clicked yes, and it instantly said, we've sent her a mail to ask if you can be part of her friends. And I thought, oh, geez, I didn't want that to happen. And I immediately clicked, take me out of her circle of friends, hoping that it would disappear. And within 30 minutes, I'd gotten an email from Mary. And we shared emails back and forth. And by the end of the day, I found out she was the same age as me, used to live in Denver, has a lot of similar history. And by the end of the next day, we'd already been invited to her house when we were coming to Marrakesh.
Oh, my goodness.
By time the day was out, I said, I'm sorry to bother you, but while I have you on the line, how do I find a place to stay? She called a hotel she liked, got us reservations, answered any questions we had. It was amazing. And so it was actually very cool. We did get to meet her, and I brought her some geology equipment because you can't buy it in Morocco. I know on previous trips I joined various forums and things. Mm-hmm. I hadn't ever found one for Morocco. This was a very strange circumstances, but it worked out wonderful.
So you were visiting a friend you'd never met, basically.
Exactly. By time we went there, a friend I had never met.
And what were the highlights of the trip?
There's a square in the middle of the old city. Mm-hmm. That's called the Jemaa el Fana. It's been a gathering place of the Moors, the Berbers, the Arabs, the Jews, for nearly 1,000 years. It's, of course, Marrakesh is set in near the Sahara. Mm-hmm. And it's just, this is the place that brings every imagination of Indiana Jones and Clive Cussler's book and all that stuff to place. The snake charmers, the beggars, the food stalls, everything's there. It really was amazing.
It looks like, and I obviously Rod has sent pictures that I'll put up links to on the show notes, and I'll illustrate the iTunes enhanced version. But it does look like it's quite the it's a large market. It looks like
The main square itself can hold, I'm sure, several thousand people. It is very large. Then from there you walk into absolutely the Warren's mazes of the Medina and the Kasbah and the souks.
And you are a little more adventurous than some, as I see pictures of you eating dinner in the stalls in the market. So I know some people are wondering, you know, when is it safe to eat that kind of food, or should you go to a restaurant? You guys obviously decided that this smelled good, looked good, and we're eating here in the street vendors in the market.
We did feel a little bit like we were taking our lives in our hands on that one. The thing is not so much in general. Very clean people, very clean mm-hmm. place. The real restaurants are all good. The sad part, they have this giant square. About 5 p.m., they have little squares marked out. People show up. There's no running water. There's no electricity. They use propane. They set up their stoves. They get like one pot of hot water. We showed up first thing thinking, well, we're going to get the clean dishes from last night before they're dirty, because they literally take one pot and wash the dishes all night in that pot. And we did notice the guy washing the dishes had an open sore on his hand too.
Oh.
So it was like, yeah, okay, we made it through the one meal. Everything was fried or cooked really well.
Uh-huh. And you had mentioned,
but we had no problems the whole trip, certainly with issues related to food.
And we talked a little before we started recording about food, and my picture of what Moroccan food and what you were having and finding in restaurants sounds like it wasn't quite the same. So I picture, as you talked about, couscous and maybe a Moroccan chicken or some of those sort of recipes. What were you eating and finding in as you were going around Morocco? What did you like, and what would you avoid next time?
I actually liked everything they had, okay, except We went to one fairly high-end, very traditional Moroccan restaurant, because we were told to do that.
Uh-huh.
And we went in, and it was like the five-course meal, and it had all the traditional things, everything from the lamb stew to the couscous to pigeon and phyllo dough and all the dishes. But the Berber stew that came, the guy put all the meat in my wife's plate. And in my plate, there was kind of this gloppy-looking thing with a little bit of meat. Turns out I got the penis and testicles, which is a very, very high honor. But I have to admit, it was a bit of an adventurous experience to try it, even by my standards. And it was not as bad as I thought it would be, although I didn't finish everything.
Okay.
Other than that, the food was great.
Now, you mentioned a fact about meat in Morocco before we started recording, and I'm going to ask you to repeat that because it caught me off guard.
All meat that's hanging in the market still has the genitalia attached to prove that it is male meat, because a Moroccan man will not eat female meat because it may still have female hormones in him and make him less of a man.
That one was really news to me. I was caught a little off guard by that. And you said
I didn't realize that. It's something that Mary told us about that I didn't know to look for.
Interesting. And you say you didn't find couscous, which was one of the things that surprised you.
The couple of things that we didn't get very much couscous, and somehow I expected to find a lot more dates. And while they were at the markets, you didn't really get them in meals, unless they were a little bit in the tangines, which were wonderful. And the other little, side note, the most wonderful orange juice you have ever had in your life.
Oh, interesting.
It was spectacular. When you go to Hawaii, you get great pineapple. Chile, great kiwi, but oh my goodness, the orange juices in Morocco was unlike anything I'd ever tasted anywhere.
And it looked like you got plenty of olives.
Olives for everything. Olives for breakfast, lunch, and dinner of all different kinds. And I happen to like olives, which is fine. But
I don't know if they go with my Cheerios, but sure.
Well, apparently they went with my eggs, as you see in one of the pictures.
Right.
And as part of that, as a little side note, the French were wonderful in the sense that when they came to Morocco as the colonial masters, I guess it was, or leaders, they left the old cities intact, and then they built new cities around the old cities. And you can very much see the new city, which is the French city with French cafes and French everything, compared to the old city, which is definitely very traditional Moroccan.
And of the sites that you saw, you mentioned the market, and I just loved looking at some of your pictures of the spice merchant and the food stalls and those things. What other places did you find in Marrakesh that you were really glad you had gone to?
Well, certainly spending a lot of time in the old city, the northern side of the old city is all the markets. It's amazing that there's just literally hundreds of these stalls all with the same stuff, yet having looked at the guidebooks, there's actually differences between them, which was hard to figure out, but eventually you did. And then in the southern part, you had the Royal Palace, the Casbah, which is just the old fortress in the city, and you've got all these things. Outside of the city, you can get to the Atlas Mountains. We didn't, because we just ran out of time. There's an area called the Majorelle Gardens, which I took lots of pictures of. A guy who was apparently an artist and very well respected had these huge gardens made in a museum out of it, and he created a color called Majorelle Blue, and you'll find all of the buildings have a little bit of this blue. And I'll throw in a little side note, apparently some French guy that was like the leader, I don't know what you call it, the governor over the city at the time, loved the ochre color of some of the buildings.
Mm-hmm.
So he made it a law that all buildings in Marrakesh have to be ochre colored. None of them can be painted.
Oh my.
So it was actually a French guy that came up with that rule.
Now, how are you getting around? I noticed you sent two pictures of the Majorelle Gardens, one with the tour buses there, which is just packed with people, and one after the tour buses left, which is just empty of people. So clearly you weren't going around by tour bus.
No, we've had a tendency to generally go for the independent travel. Mm-hmm. We it's very compact. We were able to walk everywhere.
Okay.
And we also took taxis. And the taxis, even when they were robbing you blind, were still fairly reasonably priced.
And language, how well do you... Moroccan would be the language that's spoken there. You were getting around with English, I'm assuming?
The first language, of course, in general is Arabic, mm-hmm. and the second language is French.
Oh, okay.
And language number three for you is German. English shows up somewhere around fifth or sixth. It's actually surprisingly, it's probably the most difficult place we've ever been to get by with English only.
Okay.
And that is all that we know. We did have a couple cab drivers that knew just enough English to tell us we should learn French.
And okay, so if you were going to learn Arabic, then French would be the next best, most helpful, and German after that.
Yeah, French really is the best. They speak French a lot. There is a number of people that speak Moroccan, but they're really the native language in Arabic, then French. And, of course, you can always get by because the place names, once you hear them or see them, are not that difficult to say. Mm-hmm. They know what they are. You can all figure out how to tell how much money it is.
Mm-hmm.
After a while, you learn to just try to force them to only take half of what they want and walk out of the cab if they want too much, and then they'll take it. But even still, Mary, the lady we knew, was always, oh, it should be 20. And we're like, well, you know, we're lucky to get by at 80. And she says, oh, that's horrible. And sure enough, for one day when we were out in the new city where people actually live, the cabs just would ask for 20, but boy, as soon as you hit the tourist area, it was horrible.
Sure.
Eventually, we were like 40, and you'd hold it so they could see how much it was. They'd shake their head no, you'd walk away. They'd yell at you, you'd come back and go. But I think you've been to third world countries.
Sure.
They're all the same way.
Well, and they're known for their trading skills. I mean, that's one of the things that very well known for, so...
It's pretty much a given. You're always going to lose. It's just a matter of how badly you're going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
There are, I guess as a side note, the big thing, of course, is buying rugs there, which we did not expect to do and ended up buying one. But in the markets, lots of places selling bad rugs, cheap rugs. After a while, you can tell that the dyes may not be stable. You always have to check that. But there are, if you look at your good guidebooks, there's two or three places that are basically no barter with really good merchandise. They wear special tags, name tags, and you can go into those. And you may not get the deal that you would get with 6 hours of bargaining and really, you know, perseverance, but you're going to get a good rug at a fair price at that point.
So what's the biggest advice you have for somebody who's going to go to Morocco? What's the thing that you found most useful to know?
Well, I think in general, it's just the thing that people who travel a fair amount discover over time, which is you've got to take the place you're going, you know, on its terms.
Mm-hmm.
You can't walk in as an American and expect it to be an American place or to have American standards.
Sure.
You know, keep time American, whatever it may be. You've got to take it at its pace and its speed. And if you do that and be willing to realize you're going to get frustrated, you're going to get lost in the Medina, half the people are going to tell you the wrong directions, half of them will tell you the right directions. And, but, you know, kind of sit back, relax, you're on vacation. Don't try to do the whole city in one day. Be there long enough to enjoy it.
How long were you there?
We were actually there for 9 days, which was probably too long.
Okay.
9 days was too long, was not long enough to get out to other places, but it was too long to see everything in Marrakesh.
Hmm.
We always have had a feeling that you don't want to go in and try to see London in 2 days type of thing. You want to sit still long enough to get a feel for the city and what the city is. I suspect in Marrakesh that's somewhere around 5 to 6 days. You can really, at that point, feel like, yeah, I've seen the city, I know what's going on, and move on from there.
Yeah, I talked to a friend today who told me she was going to Paris, and could I give her recommendations? I said, how long are you going to be there? And she said, 1 day. It's like, ooh, that's a little bit of a challenge. But
yeah.
In terms of taking things not expecting the U.S. when you go to Morocco, also not expecting the U.S. plumbing, according to at least one of the pictures you sent.
Oh, that's right. It was one of the hole in the floor with the that was the bathroom, and that was actually at a pretty nice restaurant. And then the bucket on the side is both the place to wash your hands and to flush it at the same time, so to speak, because there's no toilet paper.
Right.
As a result, we used the hotel pretty regularly. You made sure you were at the hotel breakfast three times a day as necessary. Good restaurants in the new city did have Western plumbing, and that was helpful.
And
that's the way certainly anyone traveling to the third world has to be prepared for some of that.
Now, it looked like dyeing was an industry that I don't associate with Morocco, but I see a number of pictures of freshly dyed garments, and is that particularly... that you just happen to be in that area, or is that more well known in that area?
Well, I don't know if Morocco or Marrakesh is known for that overall. In the old market, there's different neighborhoods. There's the tanneries and the dyeing area, the area they make pots and shoes, all that stuff. There's different areas. Some of them are very hard to find. Some of them are kind of hidden away. I guess that's the same as hard to find. The dyer's quarters is very visible, and when you look at these poor people, these guys are sticking their hands in dye and lye and whatever all the chemicals are all day long, and kids, we thought, oh, it was both very colorful and exciting as well as very sad at the same time. So we did buy a little bit there as well. And I think that's how we got into there. After we bought some stuff, they took us in the back room, so to speak, to show us what was going on.
Mm-hmm. And you have pictures of one of the museums that has a lot of the what I think of as I think of as Moorish, because I'm seeing it in Spain usually, but the very Islamic architecture with the very pretty geometric patterns, since they can't use any depictions of animals or people in their architecture. Mm-hmm. They have these wondery geometrics. Is that something that you'll see more in the old city then?
Absolutely. Well, it's everywhere, but mostly in the old city, and particularly in the museums. Of course, Moorish is from the Moors,
right,
of the Moroccans, and you do see it there. And it was gorgeous architecture. I don't know what else to say about it. Particularly in the museum there was really gorgeous. Amazing the amount of time it must have taken to make that stuff.
Yeah, especially one of the things I enjoyed about that architecture is the mosaics and the intricate mosaics and the geometric patterns. And it looks like that is very similar to what you'd find in southern Spain for obvious reasons, but.
Mm-hmm. Well, beautiful. Certainly from Tangier to southern Spain has incredibly tight ties. Northern Africa and southern Spain have a lot of, history crossing back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned that you went to Morocco, that you couldn't fly there directly, at least on the flights that you were using, so you were going through Paris to get here.
Yeah, we were initially figuring, well, we'd fly Royal Air Maroc, which was a Delta partner, straight in. Turns out they don't take frequent flyer miles, and we were quote-unquote stuck on Air France. The next step was apparently finding that from Air France it flies into De Gaulle, and the flights to Morocco are out of Orly, and they're timed in such a way you can't make the flight in one day. So the airline let me know that we had to spend a night in Paris, and it was at our expense. And the little piece said, oh, gee, isn't that awful? Paris is a city we hadn't been to. And to be honest, I hadn't. And we had more trepidations with Paris than we did with Morocco. We've had friends been there, had great experiences, but a lot of them had bad experiences. And the old, you know, snobbish French and all that stuff. And Paris was not a city we ever wanted to go to.
Oh, that's too
bad. And so then it was, we're stuck there. Let's get over jet lag. We'll stay there for 3 days, and then we'll go 9 days to Morocco with the other 2 days. That's, you know, a two-week trip. And we arrived in Paris, and we went in and just fell in love with the city. The people were nice. Mm-hmm. I think the problem is our friends have this idea that, you know, you want to go in and eat in 30 minutes and get out. We were like, you know, this concept of 2.5 hours for the meal, sitting and watching people walk by, finishing with great espresso and a nice Cuban cigar. How bad is that? You know, it just was fantastic. How could we get back at the end of the trip? We said, how come we didn't do, you know, 5 days in Paris and six in Morocco? It would have been perfect. And but it is a lot of flights to Morocco, a vast majority are on Air France, and you can always, if people don't know that, you can always stop at cities on the way. We've done that before. So basically, if you go to Morocco, you get Paris for free, spend some time there. And my wife liked it so much, she said our trip next year is to Cairo, as long as we get to stop in Paris for a few days on the way.
Well, we need to do a trip on Paris, because I need to answer my friend's question of places to see. But I love Paris and Europe in general, which is I still have a number of stories we need to talk about there. But I do know what you're talking about with the lounging over dinner. The first night I think we were in Europe, we couldn't figure out. They were so rude. They kept seeing us, but they wouldn't bring the check. But of course they wouldn't there. They wait until you ask for it, because they would consider it rude to throw the check at you as if they wanted you out when you have the table.
Well,
you have
absolutely.
It for the evening. So once you get a hang of that, it's a wonderful, but when you're thinking differently, like you were saying with Morocco, when you're expecting the way things are at home, it can be quite a shock if you don't adjust.
We found if you... Yeah, you went with what they want, and bam, it's there. But we'd been through Germany, Czech, Austria, England, Denmark, a number of countries on a number of trips, Ireland, and Paris was definitely, and I suspect the rest of France, more so than any of them. The whole meals are entertainment in themselves.
Sure.
Even the cafes.
Any last words on Morocco?
The secret thing with Morocco, and it doesn't have to be just Marrakesh, Fez and Rabat are also historic old cities with medinas and bazaars. I guess as a side note, Casablanca is a French city built by the French when they were running the place. It's not originally an old Moorish Berber city. So if you're going to Morocco and you read up on it, make sure you get to one of the cities with the great old medinas and squares. That really means Fez and Marrakesh. There's nowhere else like it in the world, and I just can't say enough about how much this trip exceeded expectations. And we've been to a lot of places in the world. Very few of them have exceeded expectations, especially when it's been so difficult to communicate.
Uh-huh.
I think there's always a little piece that Ireland and Australia exceeded expectations, but you could talk with everybody, and that helped.
Sure.
You couldn't talk with people here very much, but it still just exceeded expectations. Everybody was friendly, and everything's dirt cheap. The hotel, while we had little issues with always having enough hot water, it was $40 a night, even though the euro's in the toilet. I mean, the dollar's in the toilet compared to the euro. The meals were like the price of going to a Denny's, but you're eating at high-level restaurants. It was cheap food, wonderful people, inexpensive hotels. Your dollar goes a long ways. It's clean. It's safe. and it's a place to see Arab culture that is safe. One final little comment put in. I'm sorry to Steve at the end. We mentioned wine.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big wine guy, and Morocco has a history of wine going back before the Romans. That goes back over 1,000 years, 1,500 years, and the French brought their knowledge, and in some mountains up near the northern part of the country, they do some wonderful rosés, some decent reds. You can't afford to buy alcohol in an Arab country that's imported, but when you're there, every one of the Western restaurants had local wine, and it was really tasty stuff. I was surprised.
Interesting. I wouldn't expect that in an Arab country. I'm a little surprised by that, with the prohibitions on drinking alcoholic beverages in Islam. But they kept that winemaking tradition even after incorporating Islam.
Yeah, and I don't know the whole history there, but I was surprisingly good. Actually, when we hit Paris and got some rosés in Paris before coming home, they were not as good as the ones that we'd had in Morocco.
Interesting. Well, I thank you very much for being on the show, Rod, and for sharing your experiences. It looks fascinating. It sounds wonderful. So I appreciate you sharing that with us.
Well, thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it. I love your podcasts, and definitely wait for every new one to come out.
Well, thanks very much. Well, this show has already gone a little longer because of the interesting interview with Rod, so I'm going to skip the section on internet resources, but feel free to go to amateurtraveler.com and comment on this episode. Go to the discussion board, give me ideas for future episodes, and please, if you enjoy the Amateur Traveler podcast, tell your friends and vote for it at Podcast Alley, Podcast Pickle, Yahoo Podcast, and wherever fine podcasts are distributed. And thanks for listening. This episode was brought to you by HotelBook.com, which features nearly 5,000 unique and independent hotels in more than 140 countries. Whether it's a resort, a cabana, or a castle, HotelBook.com invites you to stay your way and stay independent. Visit HotelBook.com to see the latest destination deals with rates from $60 a night. From an upscale city hotel to a relaxing beach retreat, HotelBook.com will show you the best deals for that one-of-a-kind travel experience. HotelBook.com. Stay independent.
The best and the brightest served up daily by the sharpest minds in content delivery, Pod Show, and Limelight.